The interview you've been waiting for. Dr. Judy Wood joins me to discuss her book, Where Did the Towers Go? She's a former professor of mechanical engineering who left Clemson University to research the destruction of the World Trade Center towers. Her book, Where Did the Towers Go? Is the evidence of her forensic investigation on what physically happened to the towers. In 2007, she used her research to file a federal lawsuit against the contractors of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, called NIST, accusing them of science fraud in their official report on 9/11. I welcome Dr. Judy Wood to Off the Grid. Welcome, Judy. Thanks for joining me Off the Grid.
Well, thank you so very much for having me.
Before we go into the book, Dr. Wood, I want to go into you a little bit. Okay, you graduated from high school. Where did you go next and what have you accomplished?
I graduated with an undergraduate degree at Virginia Tech in civil engineering. And then worked in between and went on to a master's degree in engineering mechanics, and then went on to a PhD in materials engineering science.
Does this all fall under physics, what you would learn in high school in physics a great deal?
Yes, applied physics, and also looking at materials characterization, finding a new material and identifying what all of its traits are.
And now, and so you obviously, like I said, you have a BS, an MS, a PhD. You know what you're talking about when it's in your field, correct?
And taught graduate courses in it.
You've taught graduate courses, so your credentials are there. Judy, in your opinion, what the hell happened on 9/11?
Well, you need to start with the evidence. You don't start with a theory. That's a big mistake that many people make. Because, as I say, if you want to know how tall somebody is, you begin with a measuring tape, not a theory. And also, you don't take theories to court. You take evidence to court. What I discovered was that the buildings did not burn up, nor did they slam to the ground, but most of them turned into dust in midair. That is remarkable, because we've never seen something like that happen before. But we know they turned into dust in midair. Most of them did. Not every speck, but the majority of the buildings. And there were seven buildings, not just three. So there were seven buildings. Because if they had slammed to the ground, you'd see a pile of rubble left over. That didn't happen. And if they slammed to the ground, Lower Manhattan's underground would have been flooded because you would have ruptured the bathtub. Now that's a kind of dike that goes around the base of the towers, because the towers were actually built in the Hudson River, 70 feet below the water table. So if you drop two 500,000 ton buildings, slam them down onto a dike, you'd rupture that dike. That didn't happen. Also, if you slammed them to the ground, the seismic signals would have reflected that. Like you hit a rock with a hammer, it would ring like a tuning fork. That didn't happen. There was no detectable signal that traveled through the earth, only a surface wave. And that's what you get like when you get up off your mattress in the morning, your mattress recovers. The signal doesn't travel through the earth. And that would only be true if the buildings didn't slam to the ground, but turned into dust.
And so what occurred that day, and I know you've taken some criticism using the term dustified. You kind of came up with a new word right there. Something was dustified. When you say that, you're referring to what actually happened to this big mass of concrete and metal. It was turned into dust, right?
Right. And we don't have a word to describe that phenomenon. And we've never seen that phenomenon before, so we need a new word to define it. And that's another characteristic of good forensic science, is if you don't know what something is, don't use the name of a known phenomenon, because then you're biasing your observations. You see a hazy mist and you call it smoke, you're assuming the cause is fire. But just keep generic terms as placeholders. If you can call it characteristic 297-3A. That's a bit awkward. So that the fact that it's awkward would even bias your observations. Just whatever term that comes to you, and just be consistent, define it, and then move on with that.
What made you decide to research 9/11? What led you to take this up full time and actually leave your teaching position?
Somebody needed to. On 9/11, sitting there in the faculty conference room with senior faculty next to me, I looked and like, don't you guys think this is weird? And they looked like, what kind of a wacko are you? Because, you know, of course the building collapsed because they just told us it collapsed. But a collapsing building doesn't look like that. That's frothing into dust. And that fascinated me, and I learned immediately you weren't allowed to talk about it. So it's like, am I on a foreign planet? And okay, the grown-ups are going to take care of it. But it came to a point where it was clear the grown-ups weren't going to take care of it. And that's when I realized, whose job is it to take care of it? This is our world. This is our country. It's our job, every one of us. And I knew that if I didn't do it, nobody else would.
Motivation-wise, do you favor one political party over the other? Are you neutral, independent? Where politically does Dr. Judy Wood stand?
I think that political parties are like two different jerseys of the same team, the home jersey and the away jersey. And they're all, it's just a squabbling back and forth, and that distracts you from what you need to talk about. And this business of sides, like this recent thing that's come up in Nevada, why doesn't somebody just sit down and say, what's the problem? Once we define the problem, then we can solve it. Instead, it's like, let's draw this line and start fighting whoever's on the other side. Fight, fight, fight. And you don't solve anything.
You took time. This book is tremendous. I've read it. What's your response to people who chalk up all your work and call what you do junk science? Because haven't the truthers labeled you that?
Yes, they have. And I have to ask, you know, why aren't they interested in determining what happened? They call for a new investigation. Here it is. If it's something's wrong with it, why don't they refute what's wrong with it? No one has refuted anything in my book.
Not only that, where do they come up with junk science when you're a physicist? That's not junk science. That is science.
Right, right. And if you don't base a forensic study on evidence, what do you base it on? Guesses?
Let's get to something really interesting. The thing that really, really got to me, one of the things in your book, are these toasted cars. They found cars toasted as far away as six blocks. How could that possibly be done by two planes hitting a building and a building collapsing that would affect cars six blocks away? And the interesting thing about it was it was only the metal that was burnt.
Well, there's different aspects of it, but it did appear to be material specific. Like whatever was affecting things would affect one type of material, not another. Again, I define toasted. Toasted means like it's toast, it's history. You can't fix it, you gotta get another one because it's beyond hope. It was a convenient word because I didn't know what had happened to it, to the car. So it was a placeholder, it's toast. And if something is toasted right up to a line, and then not toasted right adjacent to that. Fire doesn't do that. Fire is black and white and shades of gray in between. Not, you know, completely toasted and then pristine. And this is one car that has police lights on the top. That's some polycarbonate that kind of melts at low temperatures. But the inside is completely toasted. There's nothing left but just the raw bare metal. How do you explain that? That's not heat doing that. And some have plastic trim around the edge.
Many of these cars were flipped over and were actually flipped onto their roofs and all that. And I remember people telling me the explanation I got when I brought that up. I said, how could these cars be flipped over on their roofs? And the explanation I initially got was, well, when the buildings came down, there was such a force of wind, almost like a tornado, that it was that powerful it could flip cars. And then I looked at the photos in your book of the flipped cars, and right next to the car, you see a tree with all its leaves on it. So clearly the cars were not flipped by some energy wind that happened, because if that would have happened, wouldn't the trees have been stripped of their leaves?
Correct, you're spot on. And also there are witnesses who describe being lifted up and carried like a block.
What explanation did he give as to what happened to him?
He didn't know. That wasn't... I've seen a tailoring of his testimony over time, and I think it's just to stay out of trouble. That initially, what he said, you know, he really described what he experienced, and then since then, it morphs into, well, it must have been a big gust of wind that blew me in. But he said it was picked up like being picked up by a tornado. That
really?
I found very interesting, because I've also been looking into tornadoes, and there's a lot of similarities with what happens.
Stay tuned for my two-part interview with Judy Wood on Aura.tv. Where did the World Trade Center towers go? My guest today believes she holds the answer. Today I welcome Dr. Judy Wood on Off the Grid. Let me ask you this, Judy. Here's something people are completely unaware of that your book showed me, and I knew nothing about it. There was a major hurricane right off the coast of Manhattan that day, wasn't there?
Yes, it was shocking. And how I discovered that, I was looking at how the dust went up. The dust went up and up and up. And so, okay, how far up did it go? So let me go look at some weather satellite images to see how far up it went. And I looked and I went, whoa, what is that? And it's a hurricane, Hurricane Aaron.
And it was right off the coast of New England, off Manhattan. And then, and according to your book, after 9/11 happened, the entire hurricane changed direction, didn't it?
Right. Now, there was a high pressure system coming in from the west, but on day one, they thought that was going to cause it to turn around from the text messaging from the National Hurricane Center, and it didn't turn around. And on day two, they thought it was going to turn around. It didn't. Day three, they thought it was going to turn around. It didn't. Day four, they thought it was going to turn around. Well, it's a good thing it did, because they're out of time, because it was right at the end of Long Island, and it was also raining on Cape Cod from the outer bands of the hurricane. And you can't evacuate however many millions of people live in Manhattan.
Can you correlate what happened on 9/11 to the changing of direction of this hurricane?
No, I try to be very careful, especially if you're approaching something that you think is a psychological operation. It's very important to not be led by what you think, because, you know, breadcrumb trails could be left there to follow. And so I go with what I know that I know that I know. And, you know, the hurricane was there. I know that. People were not notified very much. It wasn't zero reporting. It was well underreported. And you know that weather stations love to milk them for all they can get. They, you know, dramatize as the hurricane's coming. Are you ready? Are you ready? And everybody gets excited about it. This went without a mention. So that was strange in itself. And then I start wondering, okay, what do hurricanes do? And they produce a static field around them. And people talk about feeling the weather change. People with arthritis often describe feeling the weather coming, because they're sensing an electrical kind of atmosphere around the storm system. So, okay, I went and looked at the weather reports for the three major airports surrounding Manhattan, LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark airports, and all three reported having thunder on 9/11.
The 9/11 family survivors, have they responded to your work at all? Are they opposed to you? Do they support you? Are there any victims of 9/11 you've ever been in contact with?
Yes, I've had several people contact me after reading my book, and they've just been very appreciative of what I've done. They've sent me some gifts, and just they said it's the least they can do to thank me for putting an end to their wondering what happened.
So your contact's been very positive with 9/11 victims then? There hasn't been many that have been negative to you?
Of the ones that have contacted me. And while I was working on the book, there were also first responders I was communicating with. And some of those didn't want their names used because, well, truthers come after them, and you know, it becomes pretty nasty.
Yeah, what I found interesting was when I was on a book tour, and of course I was asking a lot of questions, I had a New York City fireman come up to me on a book tour. I think I was in New Jersey at the time, and he handed me a key that was from the World Trade Center. It said right on it, and he said, "I want you to have this." And I looked at him and said, "I don't want that." I said, "You should keep that. You guys are the ones that died on 9/11. He said, "No, we all," and he meant the other firemen, "we all want you to have this," because he said, "You're speaking for us. We can't talk about it." And I found out that any of them, if they talk about it, they lose their retirement. How can that be built into collective bargaining?
I don't know about that, but what I do know of the ones I've talked with, Some of the things they've seen, and my book only touches on some of their experiences. I'm working on another book that has more of the up close and personal type of information. But the stuff that they saw was just horrendous. I can't imagine what the poor firefighters went through, because they're geared to save lives. And here are these people coming out of the windows, and they couldn't save them. They felt helpless. That must have been just so horrible. And other weird type things that no one would believe if they talked about it. So of course they don't want to talk about it, because they look like a lunatic. George Stephanopoulos, who said 24 hours afterwards, he said he was asking, I think it was Peter Jennings in the studio asked George Stephanopoulos, where'd all the rubble go? George says, well, I've been asking some folks that, and one volunteer, Robert Gerlinski, explained it all fell down into the ground, was pulverized, evaporated. Wow. You have to feel for him, because he's doing the best he could to explain to the world what happened.
Has it been tough writing this book? Has your life gotten worse since you wrote this book, or has it gotten better?
Well, it's all relative to your perspective. What I've gotten from this is so much more than I ever thought I would have in learning about life and learning about people and how much people are easily swayed by emotions and thoughts and groups, because they want to go with a group rather than go off and think on their own. And if they're afraid what somebody else will think of them in public, so they have to keep their thoughts to themselves. I mean, all of us have that to some extent. Look at me, right, for the first couple of years, let the grown-ups take care of it. But then I realized somebody needs to take care of it. And other aspects I've learned about is, well, think about this. This is the most unbelievable part of it, or the most shocking part of it, that I believe 9/11 was an attack on human consciousness. My colleagues quit thinking that day. They were told that they saw a collapse. Okay, we saw a collapse. It's not that they're evil, stupid, or anything. It's that something took control of human thinking in a weird way. And if you stop and think more about it, almost the entire planet saw what happened that day right in front of them. And only a few really, truly saw it, what was really happening. That, to me, is a shock. I never would have imagined that.
Let me ask you plain and simple. Do you believe the government's official story?
I don't believe, I'm not into belief, but what I have seen is the official story is contradicted by the evidence. The evidence does not support that story.
Okay, good enough. That's a good enough answer. Judy, I want to thank you for being my guest here on Off the Grid. I hope you'll come back and join me on another occasion, because I'd sure like to keep talking about this. I want to keep this in the public eye, because we don't never dare forget what happened on 9/11. Again, thanking Dr. Judy Wood for joining me in Off the Grid. Be sure to check her out and check out the book, Where Did the Towers Go? I challenge you, Jesse Ventura, challenge you to read this book. It's part of my Book of the Month selection. And to my vigilant viewers, write to the websites below to win your free copy of Dr. Wood's book. And remember, stay vigilant and always, always ask questions.